This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
It's Joy's international news and current affairs show, especially for the LGBTI community, World Wide Wave. We take you around the globe, one country at a time. Full studio tonight. Tom is here.
Hello.
Hello, Will.
Hello.
Welcome, Dean.
Another Dean, another hour.
Another Dean, another hour. And Matt here as well. Now, if I said the words Jehovah's Witness, it might conjure up thoughts of door-to-door salesmen selling their religion, or perhaps those little magazines that you see in laundromats and bookstores. Maybe even the famous tennis sisters, Serena and Venus Williams. But the term gay-friendly probably doesn't seem to fit.
What is it like growing up as a Jehovah's Witness, knowing that you have different feelings?
What happens when you come out as gay?
Can you be gay and a Jehovah's Witness at the same time? To tell his very personal experience, tonight we are joined by Rob Santos, an American survivor of the Jehovah's Witness Church.
Joy!
Now, gang, we've had a message just come in from the lovely 317. Prince was a Jehovah's Witness as well. Well, thanks for that, 317.
I think Michael Jackson was as well, wasn't he? I'm pretty sure.
Could have been, yeah. Maybe. Now, we'd love to hear your messages, so feel free to SMS us on 0427-JOY949.
Now, you have given the intro and let people know we've got a guest in the studio, Rob Santos. Welcome, Rob.
Hi, guys.
Now, you're from America.
I am.
And I'm putting it out there, a Jehovah's Witness survivor.
I say that I'm in the witness protection program.
So you were raised within a family, your family was Jehovah's Witness. What's it like growing up within the Jehovah's Church?
Growing up, I had mentioned to someone earlier today that I don't know what they do now, but I can speak from the experience of what they did when I was growing up. There are some pros that are pretty good. The one of the really good things is that you get public speaking training constantly. They make you do presentations and stuff like that. So you're constantly doing stuff like
at
that.
At what age is this starting?
From as soon as you can
talk.
As soon as you can. I grew up in it, so I think my first public sermon was 5 years old.
Wow. You do role plays in front of the rest of the Kingdom Hall, don't you?
They do that too. Yeah. It's really weird to
different
to think
kind
about
of role
now,
play
if you think about
to
it.
Some of our listeners are thinking right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So is like, do you go to church every week or what does Kingdom Hall living as a Jehovah's?
It's more than every week. You go there, you go three times a week. It's a huge part of it's actually the majority of your life. And when you're in it, and there's not only the going to the Kingdom Hall, that's just going there. But then the rest of the time is you trying to convert, trying to preach, and everything, and that's outside of going to your meetings. So it's a large part of.
What's involved in trying to convert? Is that the sort of the door-to-door selling?
That's kind of their thing is one of their taglines that I can remember growing up was that it doesn't matter what their answer or what their problem is behind the door, Jehovah is the answer to all of it. You know?
Can I tell you my experience? I just had two wisdom teeth out and I was at home.
Jehovah,
and there was a knock
Jehovah,
at the door Jehovah. And they wouldn't let me go without a happy thought. I'm like in pain and yep.
That would,
so,
see, if you would have bought a magazine, your tooth would have been all right.
I was just going to say, did you participate in this regularly, door-to-door knocking?
Oh, yeah.
It's called witnessing, isn't it?
That's the witness part of Jehovah's Witnesses. You're bearing witness to anyone that can hear you.
Were you a good witness?
I think so. I definitely was on the track to become, like, because they had, there are different levels of witnessing that you can, you could just be, I guess, a casual, like, witness, and then there's the pioneers, special pioneers, and I forget what the ones above that, I think, are servants or something like that, and it goes higher and higher. They're like elders.
Sort of like an Amway structure almost.
Yeah, or like a pyramid somehow. So yeah, it's just kind of like they go up. I know that elder is not the top. There's something above elder. It's been forever, but you know, there's definitely a track, a career path for witnessing. And I was definitely on it.
I think one of the things that comes to mind is that I've had some comedians do some shows on how to deal with Jehovah's Witnesses in a comical manner when they come to your door. Did you ever experience anything comical when you did door-to-door knocking at all?
Did I ever experience anything comical?
You know, like people coming to the door wearing
nothing,
like a G-string.
Well, depending on how they looked when they came to the door, I was just like, hold on, before you close the door, let me tell you about God. You know? And they were like, oh, you know, I just came out of the shower. I'll wait.
Jehovah will wait.
Exactly. This is an important message, and keep that door open. Yeah, it was very interesting.
And in turn, And in turn, would you have had anything violent or frightening, any experiences in your door to door?
There was one time we went to, there's like seldomly reached territories.
Well, you grew up in the Bronx, didn't you?
Well, yes, but even in the Bronx, there are lots of stories from there. Because of where in the South Bronx where we went to the Kingdom Hall, there was like a crack house like right across the street. I didn't know it was a crack house at the time, but I quickly found out that it was a crack house because somebody got shot like right in front of me as I was like on my way to the Kingdom Hall. And I'll never forget, it was just, you know, like we was just walking and some guy ran out of the building and was taking a few shots back in with the gun back at the building, and then somebody shot back and they got him and he just dropped. And then we just stepped over him and went to the Kingdom Hall. It was really weird. It was just kind of like, it was like, well, can't miss the meeting, and just kind of like stepped over him and just was like, oh, sorry, buddy, you can't buy a magazine. So, you know,
I guess you can't witness him. I mean, you can't witness someone who's dead.
Yeah, exactly. So. It's just like, well,
it's too late for that exactly.
That won't help you get up the pyramid. Our guest tonight is Rob Santos. We're talking Surviving the Jehovah's Witness Church. You've got a fan, Rob, too. Yasmin says, hello. Yes, you've got the right number, Yasmin. Loving Rob on the radio.
Oh.
It's Worldwide Wave. We've got so much more to ask you.
This is Audrey Gochran, the director of Amnesty International's Africa program on the Worldwide Wave.
Now, Rob, we've just had a message come in online on from the lovely 317. Have you seen the Book of Mormon?
I have not seen it, but you know what's really weird is that in the religion, we always looked at Mormons like they're weirdos, like those guys are nuts. And like looking back, it's just like they weren't so far off from what we were doing. But they used to walk around in like the white shirts and the black ties and the book bags. And those little name tags on it. And we would just look at them like, oh, look at those weirdos selling stuff. Not like us witnessing.
I wonder if they have sales targets like you. Another message in as well. Hoffler is loving the show. Great interview with Rob. Thanks, Hoffler. It's on Facebook. You can communicate 0427-949 on the SMS or, of course, on Facebook.
And, of course, we got a message just then saying, go Grace. Because, of course, we played Grace Jones because, Rob, you would be her champion, I would say.
I am her champion. Grace, if you're out there, I'm here for you, baby. Happy birthday.
Now, Rob, tell us a bit. There's a few, can I call them quirks of the Jehovah's religion, one of which is that you don't celebrate birthdays or Christmas.
Nope.
Isn't that a bit, I don't know, dull?
I mean,
they still have
parties, but they don't have they don't have birthdays. There's no Christmas. There's no holidays. There's no holidays except for one. And that is the memorial of Jesus Christ's death. Because that's the only thing that's
happy
like,
days.
Well, like, exactly. You know, we have big balloons and everything. So yay. Duh. that's not how it goes at all. It's very somber and reflective. They have, because it's the only holiday that's like explicitly outlined, you know, in their language, the way their interpretation is it says, keep doing this in remembrance of me. And that's the only thing is because it's explicitly there. It's just like, well, I guess we have to do this every year. And that's how, that's why they do that. But I forget the birthday thing. I think it had to do with, was it like, I want to say like humility or something. It was something about bringing undue attention to yourself, which is kind of weird to like not celebrate and then go out and try to get attention to yourself selling magazines.
As a salesman.
So,
what about Armageddon? Because mm-hmm. the church believes in Armageddon. When's it coming? I just need to prepare.
I remember that when I was coming up, the year of 1975 was supposed to be when it was going to happen, but then...
Well, they've actually had quite a few.
Then they changed it to be
Yeah, because it keeps not happening.
So yeah, and then they changed the definition. The last I remember was that they changed the definition of the end of times to being an end of a certain type of person, which is like, you know... Well, it was kind of like around the time where I was just like, maybe this religion might not be
maybe it doesn't
so,
have
so
all
kosher
the, all the answers.
To say, you know, maybe there's something else going on here.
Now, the other, and I won't, it's not quite a quirk, but homosexuality. What's the church's view on being gay?
They love it. They think it's great.
You didn't see the
video. I don't think so, Tim.
Is this the elephant in the room question here at Joy?
Yeah, you didn't see the video that you just played? It ends with a big gay dance party. she's like, at the end of the video, she's all, just kidding. She's like, everything's okay. But they definitely... That was the biggest conflict, you know, internally. It was, you know, coming up with these feelings and being in the church, because they definitely tell you that like that's one of the worst things you could be, which it's the irony of really all religion is what got me to stop participating first in the Jehovah Witness, and then examining more closely the things that they believe versus the things that they do, and the things that they say they believe versus actual logic. And it's...
There's this thing about... It's the love the sinner, hate the sin type thing. They sort of say you can be gay so long as you don't do anything about it.
We have their official stance, which is... There is a difference between rejecting homosexual conduct and rejecting homosexual people. The Bible tells Christians to be respectful of all kinds of people, but that does not mean that Christians must accept all kinds of conduct. The Bible's stand is not unreasonable. It simply directs those with homosexual urges to do the same thing that is required of those with an opposite sex attraction, to flee from fornication.
Flee from fornication?
In quotation. That's from Corinthians 6:18. The fact is, millions of heterosexuals who wish to conform to the Bible's standards employ self-control despite any temptations they might face. Those with homosexual inclinations can do the same if they truly want to please God.
You clearly didn't want to please God, Rob.
You know,
maybe not enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the, I guess, that's what they said. But the, I don't know, when it comes right down to it, they had the, sorry. When it comes right down to it, there are lots of people that in that religion that, do plenty of horrible things, and they're very quick to be like, well, you know, to be fair, they do kick you out for pretty much any reason they can.
Just kick you out. They kind of haul you in give you a grilling. There's like a trial process.
That's what.
Then they kick you out.
So that's what happened to me.
What happens at a trial?
I won't go into my whole coming out story because that's a doozy. But my father was actually an elder in the church, and what they do is it's not like, you know, in a regular church where you go to like a confessional and you're just like, oh, these are the things I did to one person. And he's like, well, just say these words and you'll be fine. That is not how it works at all. You have to go in and you have to tell pretty much everyone on the panel of elders, like every detail of what you did, which was kind of strange, but they wanted to, by confessing everything and saying all that you did, it was like you being repentant, I guess.
Was it a humiliating process?
You know what? I know it was meant to be. It wasn't really for me because because at that point, what had happened was, long story short, I was sleeping with the church football coach. So it was still pretty hot to me when I was recounting the story. I was just kind of like, well, if you guys want to hear it, this is what happened. And I did do everything. And then they gave me what I thought was like really weird, even when it was happening, because I was still pretty shaken up about it, because like here I was on the precipice of like losing everything that I grew up with, you know, and that's what makes it scary, is that you're about to lose your life. You know, you grew up, all your friends are witnesses, all your family are witnesses, and if you get excommunicated, that's pretty much it. They can't talk to you, and that's it.
So but they what gave, happened with you and your family then?
Well, the first thing that happened after I told them, that they put me on something called reproof, which is like one step behind being excommunicated or disfellowshipped. So they did that. And then they told me that it was like, well, as long as you're on reproof, you can't drink milk and you can't wear white pants and you can't have yogurt anymore. And I was just like, really? But then I thought about, I do drink milk in a very seductive way. So if anybody saw me drink, have yogurt, it is a very sensual experience. I barely get any of it in my mouth.
That would have lost me at the wearing of white pants ruling.
Exactly. It's all on my chin and everything. I'm just like, this is how we do it, right? Yogurt.
What happened to your coach? Did he have to?
Oh no, he got kicked out immediately because at the time I was under 17 and he was like 26 or something. Totally hot, terrible.
So
you know.
Now to distract you a bit. So your family, did they look after you? Did they push you away? How did your family react?
Things with me and my dad were already were not great, and they got a lot worse. All that happened immediately was there was a lot more scrutiny on everything that I did because they were looking for any, drawing any line to homosexuality and everything I did, you know, things at home got really stressful. So I ended up, leaving, the house a lot more than I did before, but... You know,
now, you look like you've turned out okay. So we're going to ask you a bit more about how you got through that and where you're going. You're on the World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Tseke Kasambala from Human Rights Watch, South Africa office on the World Wide Wave.
Where we're talking all things Jehovah's Witness and surviving that with our guest from the USA, Rob Santos. Rob, we're just talking about your coming out. You mentioned that your whole life was with the church and then you came out. Where was your support? Where did you look to?
There was definitely no support. When everything happened, everything happened so fast coming out that I remember like at first, believe it or not, my parents were like, "Oh, it's okay, everything will be fine," or whatever. And I always, you know, my dad even hit me with, "Well, I kind of had a feeling that was going on, so I thought everything was going to be okay." But that quickly changed when, looking back, I think what made it change so fast was that he realized that his position in the church was in danger because he was an elder.
So he could have been ostracized by other people in the
community? Well, if you can't control your own house, you know what I'm saying? So it's just kind of like that's probably not that that was ever spoken, but it was at least in my mind implied. So they like I said, things at home got really tough. I found myself spending a lot more time trying to not be home. Then finally I left. I actually ended up tricking my mom into co-signing on a place for me so I can move out at 17. And I did, and I was doing all right. You know, I was IT was big at that time, so I had a job in the field, and I was making pretty good money and everything. I had a nice little place and everything like that. And then about a year or two later, I fell on hard times because the IT bubble burst and the company I was working for went down and everything. And I remember talking to my parents, and I was just like, "Look, you know, this is the situation and everything like that." It was like, "Do you mind if I crash back at the house for a month until I figure things out and get a new job and everything?" And at first everything was fine. They were like, yeah, everything is great. 3 days before I was supposed to move everything back, my father called me and told me, "We just wanted to know if being gay was still a part of your life." And I was just like, "Well, yeah, I mean, I'm gay, but I was just like, if you're worried about me like doing anything disrespectful to the house," no, that's not it. "But we really can't support that lifestyle, so you'll figure something else out." And that was just like, wow. And I was just like, well, that essentially means I'm going to be homeless. And he was like, yeah, you'll have to figure that out. So I was homeless for a couple months.
How did you feel about that?
It's the thing that makes this whole thing. I know that that when people hear these experiences, they're just like, you know, I still don't think that my parents are horrible people or were horrible people. The way that the religion is set up, the way most religions are set up, is just the way it's just like, well, this is what God wants, so this is what I have to do. And by doing that, they probably thought that they were just being great Christians, you know? And that's just how misguided or whatever their conscience will allow them to be. But
I remember, though, you were willing to lose your whole family structure. You were willing to walk away.
Well, I one of the first things I realized is that, well, what can I do about this? You know, I can sit here. I certainly wasn't going to, even at that point, I was not going to be like, please take me back. Please. You know, that's not going to happen. You know, what can you do at that point? And I say this all the time. If people are going to be unreasonable, then they're going to be unreasonable whether you care or whether you don't care. So why care? You know, just let them be unreasonable and just do your thing. I have bigger things to worry about at that point. Now I know I'm going to be homeless. I need to worry about what my next steps are going to be, not, you know, how they feel, you know?
Got a message come in from 317.
Yeah, from 317. What aspects does he take from his religious experience that are positive and beneficial to you today, Rob?
What did you learn?
Aside from the yogurt thing and the milk.
Exactly. I learned I got to be careful who sees me have yogurt. Like the public speaking thing is still a huge thing. I gotta admit, like even to this point, like even for work or anything like that, if they're like, "Look, we need you to make this presentation," I can do it. I can go into a room full of strangers and give a presentation.
You're not shy.
Not at all. It doesn't even like to do this. Doesn't, you know, that to know that all of you are out there listening to me, it doesn't even bother me. And I know that that's because of all the time I spent talking to all of you door to door and getting the door slammed in my face. And y'all could have bought some magazines. Come on now. No, okay. Okay.
Did when you lost that whole community, did the gay community sort of become your new family?
No, I didn't. Unfortunately, I did see that video that's out there now about the guy that from London who lost his family. Then he moved to another part of England and they kind of wrapped him up and everything like that. There were, I'll be 100% honest here, that, you know, there are specific challenges of being a minority and being in the gay community. And those challenges came up a lot faster than I thought I would have to experience even at that point. So it was like, okay, we just got dumped by everything we know, and this is all we have left is what we think we know about being gay, which we're not 100% sure on. I did eventually run into a gay coworker, an ex-coworker that was gay that let me crash at his house and everything like that, and that was cool, and we were friends and everything like that. But it wasn't like it certainly didn't become like, oh well, I'll be your new gay father or your new gay mom or your brother, and that did not happen. Which I'm not saying that doesn't happen. It certainly does happen for some people, but it from my experience, it didn't happen, and in a lot of ways, it still hasn't happened. But you know, you find your way, you find your way through it, or you don't, and that's essentially all you can do is just keep moving. That's one thing I learned even from being homeless is just kind of like, you know, you never stop moving, you never get comfortable, because then you stay. But like in everything is it that I went through from transitioning from losing that. That family, it definitely didn't go into like this whole embrace of the gay culture or anything like that.
Now, without giving your age away or anything like that, you came out at 17, so I would expect you came out several years ago. Do you have any relationship with your family or siblings or friends?
First of all, I want to say, are you trying to say that I look old? Okay. I'll have you know.
Came out 4 years ago, isn't that right?
Yeah. Okay. It's like, we can stay on that for a little bit. Okay.
I got the shovel.
I will have you know that I moisturize. So, okay. My skin is flawless, people. Don't believe them. Anyway.
We've just posted a photo of you on Facebook, so everybody can go on.
Oh, okay.
We can get people to rate, and maybe they could send in messages of what they think of Rob's skin.
Exactly, you know? But like, no, it's okay. Then you'll have to do a whole show about jealousy. Oh, you people. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, this clearly, when you came out at the age of 17, it was obviously 2 years ago. Do you have any relationship with your family, with friends from your Jehovah's Witness era?
No. I certainly tried with my... For years after everything, I did try to reach out to my family to let them know that I was interested in, even so everything happened at 17. From like I would say from 17 to about maybe 23, 24, I definitely was trying to, like, you know, every once in a while call and be like, hey guys, whatever, and then they would answer the phone, but it would be very measured responses back and everything, and that was it. And I would do stuff to help them. They would, if they found themselves in trouble, I would send them money. I would, you know.
Did you get any acknowledgement for when you sent money supporting them?
No. Okay.
Rob, it's because we're rapidly running out of time.
Oh,
it's been fascinating hearing your experience. Really, thank you for coming in and joining with us and sharing your story here on Mobile Babe.
Oh, okay.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hello, Australia. This is Noam, Apple, and Tom from Apple Models in Thailand.
the world first transgender model division on Joy 94.9.
A big thank you to our guests tonight, Rob, and also a big farewell to Dean. Dean's not actually leaving us on the show. He's becoming our US correspondent.
That's right, but as long as I'm allowed in the country, so let's not be too premature. They're sending Australians back very quickly. We're barely flipped into the boat, and then we're being, you know, taken off the line and thrown back in the water. But yes, I'll be the US correspondent.
We do look forward to chatting to you more here on Worldwide Wave. Thanks for listening to another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Worldwide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online across the world at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.